Is it a decision or is it not a decision?
It's a sort of decision by the Minnesota Supreme Court that on the face of it, it again upholds the governor's line item veto, but at the end of the day really punts on the serious constitutional issues here by saying that, again, because the legislature has enough money now to be able to exist until we get to session in February, the court's going to uphold the line item veto based upon a plain language reading of the Constitution. It didn't come out unequivocally and say that the line item veto was constitutional, but it really sort of said that because the money is available to the legislature, they'll be able to survive.
If they didn't have enough money, and obviously the governor convinced the high court that the legislature had some sources of money that could hold it over, and that was borne out by the action, although they say that those were sources that they should not have tapped, or they were kind of forced into tapping them by combination of the governor and the Supreme Court's action. But if they in fact hadn't had money, enough money to carry them over, what do you think would have happened? Would the high court have fundamentally had to have made some sort of a definitive decision on this?
I think they would have, and the fact that the legislature had the money gave them the out. It gave them the out from having to solve the really tough constitutional question here. And in some sense, you know, it's interesting to look at this opinion because on the one hand, it's the Supreme Court punting or not really deciding the hard issue, but at the same time, it's significant overreach. Overreach in the sense that what it did, it inquired into the state of the finances that the legislature had, and the court basically made a decision and said, you have enough money to do your core functions, therefore the governor's line item veto is constitutional. And I'm not sure it's the job of the court to basically make a decision regarding whether or not the legislature has enough money, in the same way that it shouldn't be up to the court to make a decision whether or not any particular program in the state of Minnesota has enough money. That's not their call, but that's essentially what they did today, is to say that the ability, or what they said on Thursday, is that the court said that the legislature had enough money, in our opinion, to be able to last until February, and therefore we're going to sustain the governor's line item veto.
I want to expand on your statement just a little bit, because we are a democracy that has three branches. They're theoretically supposed to be co-equal under separation of powers. There's a system of checks and balances to restrain the power of any one of the branches from becoming excessive, and that's kind of a value judgment, but and varies over time. But at some point, do you not have fundamental questions like this? And my question to you is, Professor, as a constitutional law expert, if a high court then just declines, and the court is the point of last resort in these kind of disputes, okay, and if the court declines, how do we get any sort of clarity, or don't we?
We don't get clarity, and I think that's part of the problem with this decision, that as I tell my students, there are some matters that are legal matters that are the province of the court to resolve, and there are questions that we're supposed to let the political process resolve. You know, political process questions are, for example, how much money do we spend on the environment, or do we cut taxes? Those are political questions that should be resolved by the governor and the legislature. But when you now start to get a fundamental constitutional question like this, you know, framed in the sense of may the governor use his line item veto to basically shut down the state legislature or to eliminate all the appropriations for the legislature, the court is required to address these issues. And how here it basically stepped out of it is by saying that, well, the issue that's being presented to us really didn't exist. The legislature is not without all its money, not without resources. It can still sort of function enough. And so what the court really did here was, in many ways, walk away from the duty it's supposed to perform. And the duty here is to resolve constitutional questions as opposed to making policy. But here, it neither resolved the constitutional question, but instead made policy.
But doesn't, Professor, then the court risk violating separation of powers itself if it does that, unless it's absolutely necessary?
Right. And a general rule of constitutional law is for the courts to avoid addressing the constitutional questions unless they absolutely have to do that. And here, the court may have been applying that dictum. They have been saying that here's our way out from having to address the constitutional questions by looking at the funding issue instead. And some might say that's a legitimate way to do it, except I think in this situation here now, the court sets itself up for a whole bunch of other problems down the line. Those problems becoming now, for example, what if the legislature doesn't have enough money? Or what if a future governor decides to wide-item veto funding for the judiciary because it doesn't like a decision by the courts? I mean, it leaves open a lot of questions that it needed to resolve. And it fundamentally didn't do its job in this case.
So it kicked the can down the road, basically.
It kicked the can down the road. And I think partly what we ought to be thinking about here is why it kicked the can down the road, because it also might have felt like that it was caught by a separation of powers problem. I mean, the court was clearly trapped no matter what it did. But one of the things that I'm very worried about in this case is the fact that we had four Dayton appointees on the court who obviously were part of the majority. The Chief Justice wrote the opinion. We did have one dissenter who was a Republican. What I started to worry about here is to what extent this decision could very well be criticized or tainted by the fact that it was driven by the fact that four of the appointees were by Governor Dayton. And during the oral arguments, at least initially, Governor Dayton sat front and center at the arguments, staring down his four appointees.
And yet there's no recourse in the sense it can't go to the United States Supreme Court, but you're talking perhaps more about the future, that the solidity of this decision might be brought into question. It could ultimately be reversed or significantly modified if this issue comes up again down the road. Is that what you mean, Professor?
Yes, exactly. Or this precedent now, potential precedent here, allows governors to do a lot more in terms of actions against the legislature, actions against the judicial branch. And so the court didn't give us any black letter law or clear lines regarding what this is really a precedent for and what the governor, how far the governor can go or not go. I think additionally, by the way it decided the case today, it's setting us up in a different way for all types of repercussions for this decision. For example, we are going to probably see a 2018 legislative session that will be ugly, to say the least, in terms of the fights between the governor and the legislature. I would not be surprised also if we saw the state legislature move a constitutional amendment to try to overturn this decision and to place limits on the governor's line item veto. I think there's a lot of things that might happen as a result of this, both politically and potentially legally or constitutionally, as a result of where the court drew its lines today or didn't draw its lines on Thursday when it issued its opinion.